Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Glad to be back after, boy, almost 2 weeks practically off to visit with some friends who came in from Trinidad. I really enjoyed my time with them. Got a chance to see a lot of Wisconsin with them and really had a great time. And thanks to Jim Packard for filling in and doing his usual outstanding job. But it's great to be back, and in particular because Mary Bell's with us to start the show off. She is the author of many books. She's written several books on drying food. Mary Bell's Complete Dehydrator Cookbook, Jerky People, Just Jerky, and Dehydration Made Simple. And her newest book is called Food Drying with Attitude, A Fun and Fabulous Guide to Creating Snacks, Meals, and Crafts from Skyhorse Publishing. And in the August and September issue of Mother Earth News, Barbara Pleasant writes as follows. In Lanesboro, Minnesota, organic gardener and food expert, drying expert Mary Bell thinks that people should look at food drying with a creative eye. Bell has invented what can only be called new foods, like succulent half-dried tomatoes seasoned with basil and thyme, or cantaloupe candy, chunks of cantaloupe seasoned with ginger and powdered sugar before being dried. Those are just a couple of the great recipes you'll find in Mary's new book, and it's really I'm really pleased to have her back. Mary, welcome.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to be here again, Larry.
It's great to have you back. You were telling me before the show that you've been a busy lady the last couple of weeks.
Yes. Well, in 1 week, my husband and I, we take the idea of providing your own food supply very seriously. And it's our hope that at some point we can reach 100% sustainability. And I've got a plan to do that. In 1 week, my husband and I, we froze and canned 65 dozen ear of corn. We dried 40 pounds of bananas. I dried 46 eggplant. We dried a lug of peaches and about 100 packages of rhubarb lace, dried rhubarb sauce. And we then we made 10 gallons of refrigerator pickles. Plus, you know, he worked full time. And you know, this is what we do. You know, and what we do as well is we try to include our family members in these, in especially the canning. And, oh, we did tomatoes too. We did tomatoes and beets, about 30 quarts of tomatoes and about 30 plus pints of beets during that time. We try to include our family in that, mm-hmm. so that as we eat the food throughout the year, what we can do is reflect back on the time that we spent together during the harvest and remember, you know, the drying of the corn or the cutting the corn off the cob. So it's a whole idea of how do we think ahead? You know, how can we live a sustainable lifestyle? We believe that at this point, we're about 65% sustainable. And by that, mm-hmm. I mean that we grow a lot of our food. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot. We also did the 46 eggplant. Did I tell you that? Yeah, I did say that. We're about 65% sustainable. And that is we grow it ourselves or we buy it locally.
Locally, yeah.
And my goal is to be 100% sustainable. I would like to compensate by taking, and I do this, take my dried foods to market. So I sell the dried eggplant, the dried tomato chips, the dried banana chips that I buy from, that are overripe bananas that I buy from local grocers, and to try to compensate. So 100% is one goal. Ultimately, I'd like to get to like 110% so that I could have some cushion there and still, feel that I am, and that I could buy other things, you know, fancier things from other places and feel that I'm still living a sustainable lifestyle.
So, what about the cost of this? Does it cost you more to buy can, let's say, or dry tomatoes as opposed to buying a canned tomato in the store or dried tomato in the store?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, any kind of food preservation does cost something, mm-hmm. but I believe food drying is the least expensive preservation method because it's a one-shot deal. You can put 20 tomatoes in a quart jar, or dried tomatoes in a quart jar, whereas if you can them, you can put maybe 5, 6, depending on the size.
Yeah.
The cost of canning, you've got the jars, the seals, the lids. You know, canning takes, you blanch the tomatoes and then you have to process the tomatoes. So that's quite an energy consumption. Whereas when you dry them, you simply cut the tomatoes and put them on the drying trays. We always dry at night when there's less demand for electricity. So we put the food on before we go to bed and then dry it during the night. And most things dry in about that period of time, about 8, 10, 12 hours. So I think that food drying is the least cost in terms of energy consumption, and that's a concern for me. And I also think that it's less expensive. Canning jars are about $1 a piece these days, so you can use less. You can also, you know, dry your tomatoes, put them in a plastic bag, and then put them in the freezer, and then they'll last for years and years and years, where on the shelf, you should really get in the habit of using the dried food within the year. As soon as the tomatoes are out of the garden, then what you can do is start using your dried tomatoes. And when you run out of your dried tomatoes, then you'll say, well, next year I need to dry more tomatoes. but use them within the year. You'll have a better product.
Mary Bell, our guest today, author of Food Drying with Attitude. I haven't given the number yet, so let me do that right now. If you'd like to join in with a question or comment for her, please feel free. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Food Drying with Attitude. We've had you on talk about the book a little bit, but it's a wonderful book. These are not, these are imaginative things that you put together here.
I hope so. I hope people look at it that way. I've written, as you said, several books on food drying, and this one is what I've found that really works. I mean, in other books, there are ideas of things to do, suggestions for things to do. And this one is, this is what, you know, if you're starting drying food and you want to really get into it and be successful with everything. This is, I think it's the right book. I wrote it with the intention of making it fun. And also, I would like for children to be able to dry their own food and to have the access of, or to have dried food available to them. Well, you can start drying food by opening up a can of pineapples, you know, rings of pineapple, draining it, putting it on the dehydrator tray, and making a wonderful, healthy snack. Kids love it. Dried bananas, you know, instead of buying bananas, the dried bananas at the store, which are fried in coconut oil, dipped in honey and sugar, and imitation banana flavoring is added, you can just go to the store, buy the bananas that have brown spots on the skin. They're less expensive. And cut them. Put them on the dehydrator, dry them, and then have that as a snack. And I also want, one of my intentions for this book is to reach to the farmers market people, because my dedication in the book is that I would like every farmers market to have a dried food vendor. The people that sell at the market oftentimes they spend a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of passion is put into growing the food. It comes into season, like the eggplant, for example, and they take it to market and there's a glut. So they're not getting a very good price for their eggplant. Instead, what I'm doing this year is, I planted 100 eggplant plants. That's a lot of eggplants.
That's a lot of eggplants.
And I anticipate getting about 4 eggplants per plant. So that means I'm going to have 400, perhaps, eggplants. So I dry the eggplant, I put it in a package, and I'm saving it. I'm not going to sell these. My intention is to not sell these at market when eggplants are in season. I mean, I'll take a few, but I'm not going to push it.
Mm-hmm.
But to sell the eggplant as soon as the eggplant is out of season, because then I can ask a fair price. So instead of selling an eggplant, a fresh eggplant, for a dollar or two at market, what I'm going to do is package up, hopefully, 400 packages of eggplant, and I sell them for $4 a piece. And in January and February, when eggplant is going to be a lot more than $4 at the market, I'm going to be able to offer people, you know, homegrown eggplant, dried eggplant, which is a fantastic product. And in the new book, I really got into eggplant because it was one of those things that I'd never really had much of a chance to experiment with. And it's a fabulous product. It's a wonderful product. And there are lots of products like that. Kale chips. You know, kale is, you know, is so abundant that drying it and making it into a chip like a potato chip. Or zucchini. You know those torpedo zucchini that people put in the back seats of cars? Well, you can peel them, cut them in half, scoop out the seeds, and then cut the eggplant minus seeds, or not the eggplant, the zucchini, into slices, marinate it and dry it, and you've got a wonderful, healthy, really nice tasting chip. That's the kind of stuff that's in the new book.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. And we have every line filled, so we should probably take some calls here. Emmett in Milwaukee, we'll go to you first. Hi, Emmett.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question for your guest regarding if she could talk about the nutritional value of dried food versus canned food versus natural fresh food. And then I'll take my response off the air.
All right, thank you.
All right, Emmett, first of all, the research that has been done on dried food, the nutritional value of dried food, has been done on commercially prepared dried food, which I think is a lot different than going out to your garden or going to the farmer's market and bringing food home, because you have the opportunity to get food when it's really ready to be processed, and you can treat that food in any number of ways that you want. Overall, dried food is the least damaging form of food processing or food preservation. In canning, what you're doing is that you're boiling food for a very long time in order to make sure the bacteria is dead, so that because the food is being preserved in liquid water, that no bacteria will grow. So you've destroyed a lot of the nutritional value of canned food. You do lose vitamin C in the drying process. But that's just about it. What I do is that I will take the peaches that we dried this week. I slice the peaches and then I dip them in, or marinated them in, apple juice. Mm. Pineapple juice works really well. So I added more value to a food already. And then I dry it at low temperatures. And you can dry food. The raw food community likes to dry food at between 105 and 110 degrees so that all the enzymes are preserved in the food. I usually dry fruits and vegetables about 130, 140 degrees, and never over 140, because you start to get a lot of darkening. I do dry meat at a minimum temperature of 145 degrees to make jerky. But it's my impression, and from my research over the years, that food drying is the least damaging. In freezing, what you're doing is that you blanch the food before you freeze it, and there you lose some of the nutritional value. And also, when you thaw frozen food, what happens is oftentimes it turns kind of mushy. It doesn't have the same cell structure, where you get really nice cell structure and rehydration with most of the dried foods. Not all, but most.
Mary Bell, author of Food Drying with Attitude, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking food drying with Mary Bell, author of Food Drying with Attitude. Let's go to Mary in Rubicon next. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I'm in the middle of canning right now, and I also have an Excalibur food dehydrator working. It's little brains out.
Oh, good. Oh, that's great.
I'm doing pickles right now. I'm on about, quart 105, I think.
Oh, man.
One of my favorites. I give them away a lot, too. Dill pickles. So it's so fun to hear you. I can't wait to take a look at your book, Mary Bell. Really wonderful.
Have you ever tried drying pickles?
No.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. You make your pickles and then you dry them, and they're just really tasty little snacks. I put dried pickles in one of my Gorp mixes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like
it. That's interesting.
Yeah, and sweet pickles, dried sweet pickles are good, too.
Oh, I make the refrigerator pickles also. I've got probably 8 quarts in the fridge right now with the overgrown pickles. I always do the sliced refrigerator ones.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, try drying a few.
That's what I'm going to do. Okay. So what should I put on them? Just take my regular pickles and dry them?
Just what I do with the dill pickles is that I do cut them into small pieces, like quarter inch, half inch pieces, not much bigger than that.
Mm-hmm. And then just dry them.
Just dry them. Yeah.
Sounds
just
wonderful.
And it really is fun. And when people come over, you'll say, you know, taste this and
yes.
and guess what it is, and they don't have a clue.
Wonderful. It's really fun to hear both of you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Mary. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Christopher in Madison is up next. Hi, Christopher.
Hello. To push the envelope a little bit further on sustainability, I've been trying to come up with a design for solar food drying. Do you have any thoughts about design of a homemade solar food drying system? Have you ever tried it? Are there difficulties with that process?
You have some experience with that, Mary.
Yes, I do have some experience with that. In the 80s, I spent some time in Central America trying to develop a food drying program and using, and I built a lot of different solar, what I would call environmental dehydrators. And they're challenging. They're challenging in a variety of ways. One is that you do have to pay attention to the weather because you do need to take food or protect food at night, either take it in or protect it from the night dew. In a solar collector, it's really not a problem at all to get heat. You can by painting it the collector black or using reflective material, you can create a solar collector that will give you the temperatures quite easily. It's the problem in solar collectors is channeling the wind. To dry food, you really need two things. You need heat and you need circulating air. The heat dries out the air, and then the circulating air takes that dry air and passes it through the food, removing the water. So in a solar collector, I think the most challenging part of that is how do you focus the wind, the drying wind, in order to get the food dry enough. And to do that, you also need to pick the right days. One of my most favorite books of all time, which helped me with the whole understanding of food drying, there's a book put out by the University of Minnesota, the Historical Society, called Buffalo Bird Woman's Garden. And it is how the Native Americans 100 years ago dried food. And one of the most important things that I learned from that book is you have to pick the right days. You know, you don't dry when there are clouds. You don't dry when there's humidity in the air, which, of course, in this climate really limits us.
Because
yes. During the growing season, you know, we have high humidity and we have, you know, cloudy days. So I've always been a proponent of electric dehydrators because you can dry at night. Because you can dry when it's raining. You can dry food 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I think that it's a good use of electricity, in my opinion. It's worth it. You need, you know, a dehydrator that is a quality machine. There are some dehydrators on the market, and I won't name names, that are not as efficient or reliable as others. So in a dehydrator that has a temperature control, so you can adjust the temperature, is really a very important thing. And as I said, you know, the fan in an electric dehydrator, or, you know, which duplicates the wind, is essential to get good quality drying.
All right.
I hope that's helpful.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Robert in New Hampshire. Hi.
Thank you very much for calling.
Robert, are you there?
Thank you very much for calling.
I think you have to turn down your radio, Robert. Turn down your radio. Oh, we're having trouble. Now, Robert, are you there? I'm afraid we lost him. I'm sorry. Robert, you can call back and call at 800-642-1234, number again, and then turn your radio down, and we'll be able to get you on the air. Let's go to Linda and Phillips next. Hi, Linda.
Hello. I am wondering, I heard her mention that she dehydrates zucchini. I'm wondering if she takes the seeds out first, or she dries it shredded or whole. And then I'd like to know how she rehydrates it and uses it afterwards.
Yeah, good question.
Very good question. The large zucchini, I take the seeds out because they're tough. So I peel the large zucchini. And these are the ones that I refer to as the torpedo zucchini. Mm-hmm. I peel them, cut them in half, and scoop the seeds out with a large spoon, and then slice them into thin pieces. And by thin, I mean about a quarter of an inch. And then I marinate them because there's not a lot of flavor there, but it is a good product to pick up flavor. So you can create just about any.
What marinade do you use? Is it like a sweet marinade or just?
Fruit
juice.
Oh, you can use just about anything. I like a little bit of like teriyaki in it to give it some zing. But, I really encourage people to experiment because you never know what you can come up with. I mean, even a pickle juice can work for zucchini.
Okay.
There's just any number of things. Salad dressings can work. Commercial salad dressings, marinate them. You just don't want something that's got a lot of oil in it because the oil won't dry. The smaller zucchini, and with the larger zucchini, you can also shred it once you remove the seeds. But I do shred zucchini, and then
Ma'am, excuse me, can I take the rest of your answer off air?
Sure, go ahead. So you do shred zucchini.
Yes, I do. And then dry it on a mesh sheet, which is an accessory sheet that goes in a dehydrator, yeah. So it won't stick to the tray. Otherwise, it can stick to the tray. And then I'll put that in a jar or a plastic bag and store it. And then when I rehydrate it, I'll just add some liquid to it. And that liquid could be milk if I'm going to make a zucchini bread or and put it right in soups. It rehydrates. The shredded, anything that's shredded and dried rehydrates very, very quickly.
And you have some recipes in your new book, Food Drying with Attitude.
Yes, I do.
For zucchini.
So. Yes, I do.
In soups and so forth. Chris in Mount Zion, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Larry, I have a book here in my hands. It's called Solar Projects for Under $100. It was published in 1991 by Story by Mary Twitchell. And in it on page, I believe it's 118, there's a solar dryer that I copied and I'm using out here on the west side of the state. And I dry all my tomatoes, I dry peppers, herbs, all kinds of things. And it works extremely well. It's based on a box. That you take a window and you put a solar plate behind it, which is no more than some cut tin, and you make it so that the tin fits into the box and the window is on the outside. I don't want to get too much into the details of how it's built.
Right.
You're better to go and look at it. And there's venting on it, and I can get this thing up to 165 degrees on a day like today like nothing. And because of the venting through the bottom, through the top, and the type of solar plate that's on the back of the window, it's really easy to regulate that heat. I take one of these thermometer probes, and I put it into the top part, which, of course, is where it would be the warmest, and you can really regulate the temperature that way. The other recommendation I would have for people is that use quality paint like Safe Coat or things like that to paint the interior white and the exterior black, and use a good food grade stainless steel screening to make your trays, and use wood, pine, or whatever to make the trays. So I have 13 trays inside this box, and then I put this window part on the front, and I can tilt it back at 45 or any type of degree I want to catch the sun exactly. And I can go out there, and if you have the chance where you can be around it, you can monitor it daily and have it face the sun, and it works extremely well.
Oh, Chris, that's very exciting. That is good work. I hope that you can get that information out to more people, because I think solar drying is a wonderful, wonderful option for people to have. So good work.
And once you've made the initial investment, now I've been using the same one for about 5 years, and with a little touch up here and there, then you're scot free. There's no electricity. There's no gas. And it works really well.
What was the name of that book again?
The name of the book is Solar Projects for Under $500. It's a Garden Way publishing book by Story, and the author was Mary Twitchell. And I believe it's from the early 90s, like 1991.
Mm-hmm. Chris, thank you very much. It's great to hear that you're having that's a wonderful success.
That is good. I like that a lot.
Thank you again. Let's go to Linda in Pleasant Prairie next. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Larry. And hi, Mary.
Hi.
I've never dried food before, and I'm like ready to go out and buy one right now. It's not really exciting, but I have a couple questions. One is, I hear, you know, you dry the banana chips and apple chips and stuff like that to actually as a snack. And when you do eggplant and beets or anything like the other foods you're talking about, do you rehydrate them to bring them into a recipe? Is that how that works?
Most of the time, most of the fruits you just eat as snacks. I mean, that's that's usually the way
with
it's
fruits,
done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most fruits.
Which I've eaten dry snacks, dry fruits, so that I understand.
Yeah.
I was just curious on the like eggplant, because I like eggplant.
Yeah, the eggplant really needs to be rehydrated. And what I do to dry the eggplant is that I cut off two ends. I cut the top and the bottom off, cut two ends to get some of the skin off, and then I use a slicer, and I slice it about a quarter of an inch thick. That's the I slice things in the size piece that I ultimately want to use, so
right.
I'm in a way preparing it already for cooking.
Sure.
And then I dip the eggplant, for example, in a salt and a lemon juice solution so it stays lighter in color. It also helps to act as a little preservative. And then I dry it, and then when I want to use it, I'll take that eggplant and dip it in boiling water. And then I'll use it in eggplant parmesan or in any other. I use it instead of a pasta too in dishes. So there's most of the time you're going to rehydrate your vegetables because they do. You dry them until they're hard. They'd be tough to just snack on.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Because like I said, I'd never really done any of this before. So I was just, but I think I'm going to get your book and start doing that. It sounds like a lot of fun. I've canned stuff. Mm-hmm. I have a great dill pickle recipe. That everybody always wants. So, drying sounds really interesting. And now, drying meats, what kind of grade of meat? Do you just take like a sirloin steak and cut it up, or is it certain parts of the meat that you want to do for jerky?
Well, there's basically two different ways to make jerky. One is with ground meat, and the other is with strips of meat. The old way to do it was with cutting meat into strips and marinating it and then drying it. The new way is to use ground meat, and I've used just about every kind of meat you can imagine, and then you add flavor to the meat. With the strips, you marinate it. With the ground meat, you add various ingredients. You know, they can be mixes, dried mixes, or you can make up your own marinades and add it to the ground meat, and then you have to form that. There are gadgets called jerky guns. They're mm-hmm. like caulk guns, and
yeah,
you put the ground.
They're
meat,
fun to use.
They are. You put Larry's made a lot of this. You put the ground meat, and then you shape it and dry it. And there are advantages to the ground meat in that there's no waste of marinade. The important thing to remember in drying meat is that you need to dry it at a high enough temperature. And the recommended temperature for a long time was 145 degrees. Now people are saying 155 degrees is better. And I think that's just fine. You know, people can also dry meat in the oven if you have an oven that goes to that temperature.
And
do you talk about that in your book, the drying of the meat?
I do.
Okay, good. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep,
thanks
a lot for calling. I kind of like the consistency, too, when you're chewing on the ground meat a little better for some reason than I do the strips.
Mm-hmm. I do, too. I also like the fact that you're not throwing the marinade away, and it really is a lot easier
a
lot easier. And pieces generally, they all dry at the same amount of time because they're the same thickness.
Yep.
You don't have a skinny and a thick piece trying to dry at the same time, so you don't have to worry about it.
Let's go to Tawny in Columbus next. Hi, Tawny.
Hi. There's one more way you can use your dehydrator, and that's to hatch eggs.
That's a new one.
Yeah, it's the right temperature. And if you're into, hatching eggs for your eggs, it works wonderfully.
Very good. Very good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Now, you've actually done this, Donnie.
Yeah. Yeah. And they hatch. And, if we didn't have anything else like a growing or, lamp. So... the dehydrator worked for that.
And what temperature do you use?
Oh, I forgot. It was a couple of years ago. I think it was like, Oh, it had to be like 94, 95
somewhere
in that
in
area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it... Well, good. Thank you. That's very cute.
I love it. Thanks, Dottie. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, that's a new use that you didn't know about.
I had never heard of that one. Yeah.
All right. Let's see if we got Robert in New Hampshire now. Robert, hi. Robert, are you there?
We're having trouble with Robert.
We're having trouble with Robert.
Sorry about that.
He's at the... Well, I tell you what, Robert, I'm there once more. We'll try. No, can't get him. I wonder if his phone quit on him there because I'm not hearing nothing now. Let's go to Mark in Green Bay then. Mark, hi.
Hi, thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Sure.
I've got a really good crop of hops coming on this year, and I'm wondering what the best means of drying them is. I've had trouble with, they're real tender, and it takes a slow, easy drying on it. Do you have any recommendations?
I don't know anything about drying hops. I've never dried it, but low temperature, what temperature are you looking at?
Well, I've just been putting in large paper bags or the old like seed bags from sunflower seed, bird seed, and leaving that in the sun and warming it up. But then you have trouble with not enough ventilation. They can rot if you have a couple cloudy days.
Mm-hmm.
Or alternately, if it gets too warm, you can overbake them and you destroy the flavors in it.
Mm-hmm. What about, we have a dryer. It's basically, just a screen that we put up on legs where we use that outside to dry the walnuts.
Yeah, I've done something kind of like that, just screens covered over with window shears, to keep bugs and birds and things off of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of harsh.
And single layer, I wouldn't want to stack them. I would try to do a single layer so that you get air coming through. It's the drying air it's the dry air that you're after. I don't know how to help you with that one. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll give it a couple different tries and I'll report back to you.
Oh, I'd like that. Let me know. I've got a website and
what's your website?
It's drystore.com. So you can get my email out of that. My email is marytbell@drystore.com. But let me know. I'd be very interested in how that works for you. And at some point, perhaps I can get a hold of some hops and try it.
You bet. I'll get back to you. Thanks a lot for your help.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And what's your website again? Give me that again.
My website is just drystore, www.drystore.com. And my email, do you want that?
Yeah.
Mary, M-A-R-Y-T for true, bell@drystore.com.
Okay. Well, appreciate that call, Mark. You could join in, too. We still have a little time at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Mary, have you got a fun recipe for us out of the food dryer or a couple of ideas from your book here, Food Drying with Attitude?
Well, again, going back to the kid thing, I really like the idea of having kids have more choices in terms of foods. So kids like fruit roll-ups, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can buy them.
Absolutely.
At the store. They like them. They're sweet. And, there's some of them are healthy. You can take a jar of applesauce. I prefer the stuff, the applesauce that does not have a lot of sugar, because if you buy the applesauce with sugar, it can get kind of sticky. So, applesauce with not a lot of sugar in it. You have in a dehydrator, you have a leather sheet. It's a solid plastic liner tray that fits in a dehydrator. And you put a little oil, just a tiny little bit of oil, push it around with your hands on the on the leather sheet, and that will prevent the applesauce from sticking. So then you put the applesauce on the leather sheet, put it on the dehydrator, let it dry for a little while, and then let the kid put some gummy worms in it, the applesauce, so you're making apples and worms. You can take and put cinnamon hearts, and you can make little designs, or you can take frosting, those tubes of frosting for cake decoration, take and, squirt that on and make, different shapes or write messages. And then the kid can take that off and eat it. Or if you have some pears, pears are coming into season, pears that are getting ripe, take the pears and, wash them, cut the top, cut the bottom off, cut the core out, put them in the blender, put the pears in the blender, puree them up, spread that out on the leather sheet. Kids love this stuff. And it shows them how easy it is to get good food. So making the dehydrator fun, you know, cut it into different shapes. I sometimes use cookie cutters and put the cookie cutters right in the applesauce. So when it dries, it's easy to get that shape. And to make it available for children, I think, is really a really good idea. And have them participate. It doesn't matter how pretty things look on the tray, you know, if they're in order, as long as they're not overlapping, you know, so that each piece can get dry. That's a good thing to do. Sprinkle the, you know, sprinkle some cinnamon and some sugar on top of apple slices, or dip the apple slices into grape juice to make purple apples, you know, making it play, you know, asking the child, saying, I wonder what would happen if we dried a kiwi. And the kid says, well, I don't know. So you dry a kiwi and then you snack on it and you say, wow, this is really good. And the kid then can take, you know, a sack of kiwis to school and share with the other kids. And it is surprising. It always has amazed me from day one how much kids like dried food. They just love it.
Well, this has been a one. You know, we have time maybe for Lars and Nina. Let's go to Lars. Lars, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Lars.
I didn't quite catch the complete earlier call when I was talking about drying hops, but I brew myself and I have a couple of hop wines growing outside, so I thought I'd share what I was going to try to do.
Good.
A little while back, one of the TV guys that run a food program, he was making his own beef jerky, and he bought multiple of those cheap 20 by 20 by 1 air conditioner filters.
Uh-huh.
Filters.
Yeah.
And he put the food between the filters, strapped them then on a box fan with a bungee cord, and pointed that out the window and let that dry, and that dried it very fast.
I love it.
Oh,
good.
My goodness. Well, on that note, we have to close. Mary, it's been a real pleasure.
Good. Thank you, Larry. I appreciate this opportunity to be with you.
And Mary Bell's latest book is Food Drying with an Attitude, a fun and fabulous guide to creating snacks, meals, and crafts. It's a wonderful book with some great photography as well, by the way, which I always appreciate in a book of this type. And it is available from Skyhorse Publishing, so just go online and go to Mary's website, drystore.com. I'm sure you can order it off there, or just order through your local bookstores. Mary, thanks again.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Mary Bell, she'll be back. We'll do this again with her. Coming up, we're going to take a look. Hey, it must be the last Monday of the month because I'm looking across the microphones here and I'm seeing Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys. So we'll talk climate and weather next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.